Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, March 27th, 2012, Carborough Board of Aldermen public hearing. The first item on our agenda is a consent agenda item, a resolution regarding payment for Bali conference registration fees. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously.
Mayor, we have a resolution to consider tonight.
Oh, right.
Another resolution. Should we introduce that at this time?
Yes, please.
Okay. This is a resolution entitled A Resolution Urging Repeal of the Recently Amended Castle Doctrine. And I'm going to read it. But before I read it, I'll tell you the gist of it, which is this resolution is written in response to the tragic killing of Trayvon Martin in Florida. And the essence of this resolution is that the Castle Doctrine in North Carolina, which was recently amended in December to expand areas where one could kind of plead self-defense or use deadly by using deadly force against others, it's similar to this doctrine that they have in Florida called the Stand Your Ground Doctrine. And this resolution, it doesn't go into the specifics of exactly what happened in Florida, but I will say, and if anyone wants to comment afterward, feel free, that no matter what facts end up coming out with regard to actually what happened when this young man was tragically killed, there's no question, if you listen to the 911 call that George Zimmerman made before the actions that led to Trayvon Martin's death, that that he was one that was kind of on the lookout for people. And if you listen to the 911 recording, and I apologize for this language, but he says on the 911 language, these assholes always get away. And then he is asked on the 911 call, he's told, you know, not to go chase the man, the young man, and he does. And then from there on out, some of the facts get a little blurry. But I think the essence of having a doctrine like the Castle Doctrine or a doctrine like the Stand Your Ground Doctrine, I think it invokes a certain type of vigilante justice that we wouldn't otherwise have. And kind of empowers, I think, some folks to take the law into their own hands. So in any event, resolution. Whereas 17-year-old Trayvon Martin was killed in Sanford, Florida on February 26, 2012, and the circumstances surrounding his death based on media reports have flooded cyberspace and the media. And whereas, at a minimum, confirmed facts show that Martin, a high school student from Miami, Florida, with no criminal record, was unarmed, yet he was pursued, shot and killed by Crime Watch volunteer George Zimmerman, who thought that Martin looked suspicious, as Zimmerman stated on a call to 911 before he set out to pursue Martin. And whereas it has been reported in the media that if arrested, the defense Zimmerman might present would be based on the Stand Your Ground Florida law, which is similar to North Carolina's newly expanded Castle Doctrine. Whereas this outrageous killing has sparked outcries of racism, prosecutorial misconduct, and a call to review state laws that allow this type of self-defense to go virtually unchallenged. And whereas the North Carolina General Assembly passed a law which included an expansion of the Castle Doctrine last year, effective December 1st, 2011, entitled An Act to Provide When a Person May Use Defensive Force and to Amend Various Laws Regarding the Right to Own, Possess, or Carry a Firearm in North Carolina. And whereas the Castle Doctrine, which previously applied only to one's home, expanded certain specific circumstances under which a person can legally shoot or use deadly force against another to include vehicles and places of work. And whereas prior to the expansion of the Castle Doctrine, it was argued that our existing legal system adequately addressed the pleading of self-defense in these places in appropriate legal circumstances, and many argued that the expansion of the Castle Doctrine was not necessary. And whereas the death of Trayvon Martin in Sanford, Florida last month serves as an example of where such an expansion of the Castle Doctrine can lead to horrific results, now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Aldermen urges our local delegation to the North Carolina General Assembly to work to repeal the recently amended North Carolina Castle Doctrine this 27th day of March. So I'd like to move this resolution.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any other discussion on this issue?
I just want to thank Lydia for doing such a great job.
Thank you, Lydia.
Thanks.
I just want to... It just sickens me to death that we even have to create a resolution like this and that the Castle Doctrine even exists in North Carolina. So I just wanted to say that.
All right. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. All right. Thanks. I believe that brings us to public hearing B1. On the draft West Main Street Road Diet Study and Oak Poplar Neighborhood Traffic Circulation Study. Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, members of the board, Jeff Brubaker will make the staff report.
Oh. Hold on 1 second. I'm sorry. I have Deborah Seaton signed up here. You wanted to address the board? This is on a matter that's not on our printed agenda.
Correct.
I see. We don't normally do that on public hearing nights because we normally do that at our regular business meetings. But if you would please come up, I'm going to go ahead and recognize you.
And you'll recognize others because I've already told someone else that they couldn't speak tonight. So I think what's good for one is good for all.
Ms. Seaton's been trying to catch up with me, and I guess she finally has.
20 days. this is in regard to the protest that occurred on March the 17th. And just as a little bit of background, on March the 16th, in the Daily Tar Heel, one of the spokespeople for the Carborough Commune signaled that my property at 203 North Greensboro Street was going to be targeted for possible takeover, gardening, future use by the organization as well. And I got several phone calls that morning by people who know me who read the article and said that I needed to be aware of that. So in response to that, I called the police department in Carborough. I was told that I needed to come and sign a paper that allowed them to act as an agent on my behalf in case any destruction of property or trespassing occurred, which I did about 1:30 on Friday afternoon. I spoke with the chief of police, Carolyn Hutchison, at some length, expressed to her that I was pretty appalled that they were heading toward my property, but it didn't appear to be an error in the Tar Heel. It did appear to be 203, the neighboring property, as they were talking about 201, which is the vacant bank building. So I got reassurances from the police department that my property would be protected, which I expect. I've been there 24 years. I'm a business owner and a taxpayer. In subsequent occurrences and statements that have been made in the press, I feel compelled to make a further statement about some of the things that were said. I was there during the entire protest. It was not violent. There were some rude things that were said to people, from people to me, as soon as they found out that I was owner of the adjacent property, but I can take kids being abusive, you know, that part's okay. But I did witness some interesting things. The main thing that I witnessed was that there was not any harassment by the police department. They were videotaping, and after the incidents that occurred at the Yates Motor building, I think that videotaping was probably quite a good idea to protect the police department to show that they were not harassing. So I didn't find that unusual, considering that most of the protesters had their cell phones, and they were videotaping as well. But I am extremely disappointed and bewildered in the statements made to the press by some of the Board of Aldermen regarding the police presence and the videotaping, as well as expressions of their ideology and whom they were supporting. It is my expectation that local government officials should have parked their political musings at the door and that their presence there should have been to witness that the town they represent was dutifully enforcing the laws and protecting the rights of the citizen and property owners first and foremost, not advancing an ideology. If such is not the case, then I find myself somewhat strangely, although politically at opposite ends of the spectrum, in complete agreement with an Occupy Chapel Hill blogger who suggests that resignation may be an appropriate avenue if upholding an oath of office leaves them conflicted. I have spoken with a significant number of business property owners in the last few weeks. Without exception, there's overwhelming concern that the town of Carrboro and the Board of Aldermen appear to have become somewhat disinterested in the vision, and I'm talking about the vision of the business owners and business property owners, of the longtime property owners. I spoke to businessmen and women who collectively represent hundreds of years of sales of goods and services to this community, who feel that they have almost completely lost control over business development, expansion, and redevelopment of properties they own. Now add to that the public display of support for groups that participate in illegal activities, breaking and entering, vandalism, allowing this behavior to almost have a town endorsement is incomprehensible. I, too, believe in freedom of speech, but I also believe we are a nation of laws and not selective enforcement of such. There is a degree of political schizophrenia that exists when the business drivers of this community are forced to run a gauntlet, not unlike a homeowners association on steroids, and this same governing board basically gives a pass to a group of lawbreakers, most of whom are not even long-term residents, if residents at all. There was no harassment by police. I was there Saturday. I was part of the reason officers were quite visible. I expected them to protect my property. I would have, if something had happened and their presence had not been there, I would have had grounds to sue the town of Carver. Myself and other property owners are thankful and expect at least that when these types of events occur. I hope that apologies are publicly made to our police department, in particular, the police chief. Any questions regarding their presence and actions should have been privately expressed. Any damage to officer morale was inexcusable and completely avoidable. Now may be the time for the governing board of this town to attempt to reestablish ties with the business owners and commercial property owners and acknowledge their rights, their incredible contributions, their visions, and their savvy as business owners to know what makes successful businesses just that. Some businessmen I spoke to told me I was wasting my time, that it was too late. One said that they develop property elsewhere and have given up on Carrboro, don't want to fight. It shouldn't be a fight. It should be a partnership. I think it's time for the governing board to start acting like partners to the residents, the business communities, and our public service providers. Less attention to political ideologies and posturing, less attention to far-reaching resolutions expressing the opinion of the board, while quite possibly not that of the community. More attention to what has succeeded and flourished in this community in the past, and what work, and I mean work, needs to be done to regain the trust of the business community before it's too late. I appreciate your time.
All right.
I think Michelle Rivas wanted to speak on something not on the agenda.
I would just like to make one point to this, that there are members of this board who have publicly thanked and supported the police department.
All right.
Thank you.
And you didn't. Michelle Rivas, please come up.
Thank you. I didn't know that was going to happen, so I'm not following Deborah's remarks, but I wanted to ask regarding the proposal by CVS, we understand that they've made some presentations to the planning board, which we as neighbors were not aware of. Excuse me. That's just unnerving. Anyway, they submitted new plans. We haven't been informed about those. The planning board did not have that on its agenda. We haven't had access to the minutes from either the February meeting or the March 15th meeting, so sorry. I'm hoping that you will be supportive in ensuring that we have a public process and a transparent process about the CVS, and that the community in total has access to all information regarding the CVS proposal. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Michelle.
Now, item B2, or B1, public hearing on the draft West Main Street road diet study.
Thank you. So this is the public hearing on a package that included two studies, including a road diet study for West Main Street and a neighborhood traffic study for the Oak Poplar neighborhood. Just a quick timeline to give you a context of where we're at. In December of 2010, the board approved a local match for the studies to take place. In February of 2011, after a Transportation Advisory Board presentation, the board supported a road diet in concept and authorized a traffic and safety analysis be completed. Decision was made to package the two studies for efficiency purposes, so we had a public participation process that involved both studies simultaneously, which was helpful because the neighborhood is adjacent to West Main Street. So there were two public participation opportunities associated with the studies. One was a neighborhood walk in November of 2011. There was also a public meeting held at Carborough Elementary in December of 2011. And I'm happy to say that both were, I'd say, moderately attended, but both had very good discussion and very helpful input from neighbors. And then for those who couldn't attend the public participation opportunities, the opportunity was available for folks to email or call with their comments. In February of 2012, a draft report was produced by the consultant and reviewed by staff. And there was courtesy review by a number of agencies who would be stakeholders in the process. And then on March 6th, the board received an initial presentation and set the public hearing, referred the studies for TAB review. And the TAB met to consider the studies on March 15th, 2012. The TAB had two recommendations on March 15th. While the TAB finds much value in the draft two studies, they said they felt more, they needed more time to discuss it thoroughly and make a recommendation for approval. They did have one specific recommendation on one of the potential solutions mentioned in the neighborhood traffic study, that the board direct staff to conduct a traffic impact analysis, evaluating different one-way configurations on Oak Avenue and possibly on surrounding streets as well. And one additional comment to the TAB from a resident who wasn't able to make it, expressed support for the study and also recommended that there be mitigation of safety issues at the Oak Avenue and North Greensboro Street intersection. And I have the summary of findings right here, but with that I'm going to turn it over to Martin Alexiou Bryson, Jody Lewis, and Miller Cochran from MAB are here to summarize the main points of the two studies.
Good to be here tonight to talk about our study again. Jeff's already given a really good background of how we've gotten to where we are, so we're going to spend a little bit more time talking about the details of what went into our study. I'm going to talk about the road diet portion of the study and traffic analysis associated with that, looking at West Main Street from the intersection with Weaver Street up to Hillsborough Road. Jeff talked about a little bit about what we've done to date, including with that we collected traffic counts, new traffic counts for the study area. We have some good data to look at. Study area itself for the road diet includes West Main Street from West Weaver Street up to Hillsborough Road in front of Carver Elementary. The Oak Poplar Neighborhood Study included the Oak Poplar Neighborhood bounded on the south by West Weaver Street, on the west by West Main Street and Carver Elementary, and then along the east and north side by Greensboro Street. So the road diet. What is a road diet? A lot of people may not know what that is, but it's just what it sounds like it is. We're going to look at options for taking the road and reducing the roadway capacity, the ability to carry more cars on the road. Right now, the cross-section of the road includes four travel lanes. We looked at ways to reduce that down to two travel lanes in each direction with a center turn lane, with bike lanes on each side of the road. We want to do this without actually physically moving the curb line. We want to keep the curb lines where they are. And the good thing about that is it's cheaper to implement. And if you discover sometime down the road that capacity is needed, you can go and do it pretty easily. But I think the concept is to put it in place for long term. So what we looked at, again, is the entire cross-section of the street. You can see in the middle graphic here, you can sort of see the underlying existing pavements with a four-lane cross-section. What the result is a three-lane cross-section with the two travel lanes in each direction, center turn lane and the bike lane. And the upper graphic shows the resulting, we'll call it typical cross-section, showing the curb lines. And then inside the curb, you have bike lanes, which includes 2 feet in the gutter, and then 3 11-foot lanes. That's pretty typical, but it may vary a little bit because the width of the road does change a little bit as you move along. Again, the concept begins down at the intersection of West Weaver Street and reaches up to Hillsborough Road, where actually we're going to be matching the cross-section on each end as you're coming into the corridor. We're connecting the bike system in those locations. One thing we did look at, but I think we dismissed, and I think we're okay dismissing this, was this idea of a bike box. What a bike box is and what it does, it gives bicyclist priority at the signalized intersection. It allows the bicyclist to use the travel lane and go to the front of a queue of vehicles, and it works best if they're trying to make a left-hand turn. They're allowed to go beyond the queue of the vehicles and get over in front of the vehicles to make a left-hand turn. While we think this could work, when you have a high volume of left-turning bicyclists, we don't think that's out there today to warrant it, so we dismiss this for that reason. Plus, it's not a common application in North Carolina. There aren't many places across the country to do this. And we were asked at the last meeting, what's the threshold for having a bike box? And there's no real threshold for volume of traffic to implement it. It's just more subjective in nature to make that decision.
Am I correct that that would be easy to add in the future, of course?
It would be. I think so. But again, it's when do you do it? What level of bicycle traffic do you really want it?
Yeah. Is it, this would be looked at for West Weaver and West Main?
Yes, ma'am.
And seems to me from my experience that there are many folks who want to make that left-hand turn there, and that would be a really good concept to test out. I'm trying to understand why we would not want to test it. And then if we found that it wasn't doing what we wanted it to do, to eliminate it rather than not try it at all. Because that left-hand turn is not an easy one, and what ends up happening is cyclists look to see, you know, is the light with me or against me, and if it's not with me, I'll just make, you know, the quick turn. I'd rather not see that happen.
Right. Everything we're talking about with the pavement marking will eventually have to go through a DOT approval. That's something we could bring up with them. They might be familiar with it. They may not be. And if we could demonstrate how we could implement it and then remove it if it maybe is creating a hazard for bicyclists or just not needed, then it could come out pretty easily. Mm-hmm. Now, the bike lane itself could remain mm-hmm. up to the intersection, but mm-hmm. the bike box is the only additional thing that's a little bit different than normal.
Now, one thing that wasn't clear to me last time, because I remember seeing the picture, was in this picture it just has one lane that has it, not the one beside it. But up here, your illustration kind of indicates it might be through traffic and the turning traffic. Is that the more common application to have all the lanes have the bike box at the top?
Again, I don't think this is a really common application, but here we tried to demonstrate how it could be used to serve the left-turning bicyclists. Mm-hmm. Now, what's shown in the graphic is a painted bike lane. We're not proposing that here because, again, everything has to go through DOT approvals and be maintained by DOT. We don't think that DOT would be willing to maintain a painted bike lane like that. I mean, if you guys want to take it on, they may want to implement something like that, but we're not recommending that.
Thanks.
I just wanted to add that just because we don't have that in North Carolina, you know, anywhere else, would not mean that we wouldn't be interested in having it here at Carver. Okay.
Right, I know. Any other comments on this before we move on?
Keep going.
So the traffic data, we did collect new traffic data. One thing to note is the data we did collect, unfortunately, was collected during the time that West Weaver Street was closed for reconstruction. So what we've done is try to artificially inflate those numbers back to what they might would have been if West Weaver Street was open. But we realize that these may be a little bit low. But so these level of service findings we're still pretty confident in. We have very good level of service B or A across the board, either existing conditions and also with the road diet in place, we feel like we still get really good levels of service. And then as an add-on to our analysis of it, we also analyzed a roundabout at the intersection of West Weaver Street and West Main Street, and that includes a five-lane roundabout, single-lane roundabout, and we analyzed that with the turning movements we had, and we, again, came up with very good levels of service. But I've got a couple of graphics showing what that may look like. Jeff Brubaker gave us this, I guess, been prepared by a previous designer. And let's kind of model, so I kind of did some crayon work on it. What the yellow is showing is the existing curb lines of the existing intersection. And the next graphic shows the impacts of what the roundabout would be. The really big impact would be on what would be the, I guess, the northern corner where the gas station is. The rest of the corners have some impacts, but not as significant as that, that land over there. The fifth leg is Elm Street coming in under, if this was left as a at-grade intersection or a conventional intersection, our recommendation would have been to try to maybe close Elm Street or at least modify the operations to make it simpler and cleaner to operate at the intersection because it's a stop-controlled approach right next to the signalized intersection. So this is what a roundabout may look like. It may shift a little bit in final design, but this is a pretty close representation of what it may look like.
Oh, I got a quick question. Does DOT do striped islands like that one has there anymore?
Which one?
Right, the existing road, you see that triangle that sticks out? It says striped island.
Oh, yeah.
Is that grandfathered in, or does DOT still do that kind of thing?
I've seen both. Ideally, you want to have a raised median for pedestrian refuge. I'm not sure why that's left there. It could be to provide bigger turning area for vehicles making the turn around that
I think
corner.
It's currently a right turn lane.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And the reason I ask is because up on Poplar, there's a similar corner, and we might want to consider a similar treatment, a striped island, to make that not as crazy of a broad curve as it is.
Right. So that's just both graphics that relate together. So what we found is the road diet is not expected to significantly reduce capacity of the road to the point that there's prevailing congestion on the roadway. And even going further, if we think we put a roundabout in there, it'll work. But again, putting a roundabout in will require more analysis than what we've done. And DOT, they typically like to look at a 25-year build-out for putting in a roundabout because it is such an investment in the roadway. You want to make sure it's going to be functional 25 years down the road. In our analysis, just think about that far. We were using just existing traffic counts for our analysis. So now Miller will come up and talk about the neighborhood study for you.
So this is the other component of our study, looking at the Oak Poplar neighborhood and some of the issues and concerns we heard about circulation and traffic in the area. So we broke these down into different sort of broad categories of comments that we heard, and most of these are from the public walk that we took, the neighborhood walk on November 3rd, and the public meeting that we had on December 5th. That's where most of these ideas come from. So the pedestrian issues are really missing sections of sidewalk, or there's no crosswalk currently in between West Main Street in between West Weaver and Hillsborough Road. That's sort of a big gap in the crosswalk area. So that's something that we could look at as part of the road diet. Also, up at Oak and Greensboro intersection, that sort of has some weird markings And it's there's no crosswalk marked there. There are also a number of issues that came out specifically relating to Carborough Elementary and some of the traffic concerns there. The roundabout, the sort of drop-off area is unmarked as to who yields to whom and sort of what the order is there. Some confusion about what to do on Shelton Street, and then the area around Shelton, Hillsborough, and West Main Street is also a confusing intersection. And then just some sort of general neighborhood circulation issues that didn't fit into any other category. High traffic on Greensboro, potential for cut-through traffic in the neighborhood, poor compliance with stop signs. What are the impacts of new potential development in the area? There's the CVS and the proposed development across from Shelton. How do those impact the neighborhood? So those are some of the other concerns that we had that came out of comments we heard from the public. And so what we did is we took these solutions or took these issues that we heard and we tried to brainstorm several solutions that the town could explore further. In general, all of these would require more detailed study, a standalone study in most cases. But we tried to come up with this decision matrix to help the town decide what options they might choose to pursue. So we had three different categories, affordability, feasibility, and effectiveness, that we tried to provide some idea just at a high level of what might be a part of each solution. So we ranked them or gave them a broad ranking. And we used a plus sign system, 1 to 3 plus signs, where 1 was a sort of lower ranking, 3 was a higher ranking. For affordability, I think generally we used 3 was less than $10,000, our estimate. 2 was $10,000 to $50,000, and 1 was anything over $50,000. I think that's, but again, you know, those are very sort of fudgy numbers. They're high level. They're not the product of a detailed engineering study. But this is just sort of to give the town and to give the citizens an idea sort of what the level of effort might be if they choose to pursue any of these options and as the town decides which, if any, of the potential solutions they would like to pursue. The one that's gotten the most attention, I think, is the first one, the Oak Avenue one-way. That's something we heard a lot from the neighbors and is a big topic the last meeting we had. And the TAB mentioned it as well. So, but that would require a standalone traffic impact analysis to really understand what the impacts to the neighborhood are and to the whole transportation network. So with that, we can take questions and comments.
Okay.
I did have a few more slides to present related to comments that the board gave. At the March 6th meeting. So one discussion point that was raised was crosswalks on West Main Street. This was one of the top issues, as Jody and Miller pointed out, this is one of the top issues during the planning process, and several comments requested marked crosswalks. A road diet would reduce the number of vehicle lanes needing to be crossed, but if it was just a lane reconfiguration, you'd still have the same distance of crossing. And the plan did mention how a refuge island could be considered at mid-block locations. I think another thing to bring up was that there was some discussion, if I recall correctly, about the Main and Poplar intersection and how that geometry causes long crossing distances for pedestrians. I believe one comment from a neighbor called Carborough a runnable community because you need to run across the street at that location. I did want to point out that the draft Safe Routes to School Action Plan, of course, in the vicinity of Carborough Elementary, did take a look at this intersection and recommended that a refuge island be placed across Poplar Avenue right here, which would, I think, help with that crossing of Poplar. If you put refuge islands somewhere in this location in Main Street, of course, you have left turning cars, so that's a potential constraint. But the Safe Routes Action Plan did take a look at putting a refuge island in this location, which would likely provide a visual cue for slowing down right-turning cars and also provide a two-stage protected crossing for pedestrians. And they kind of gave this visualization. So it has been considered in other plans, and I think that the road diet study is primarily looking at a pavement marking change. So I don't think anything in the road diet study precludes looking in the future at pedestrian refuge islands in this area.
Jeff, if you're going on Hillsborough Road away from, if you're going away from Town Hall up that way toward Hillsborough Road, you could still go left on Poplar and just go past the island?
I believe so, yeah. But that would, of course, have to be looked at in more detail.
Jeff, does what you just said mean that it would be really hard to, can you go back to the other slide, put an island midway on Main Street? Because it seems like that's one of the things that's holding up a crosswalk. So on Poplar, when you go across.
Right here.
Right, either there or on the other side. One of the reasons why there's hesitancy to do a crosswalk before being able to have a raised island is because it may be dangerous. But are you saying that you may not ever be able to have a raised island?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if you want to preserve the ability for cars to, folks to make left turns onto Poplar, you just have to be cognizant of where
it goes,
where that might be placed.
Right.
Because I don't
think... That's
why
you guys were talking about mid-block crossings.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm insisting on us considering a crosswalk here. I've talked to so many people who come up Poplar or come down the other way, and it would be really odd. I mean, probably not too many people would do it. Cut down, use the crosswalk, and then cut back up again. And I was also curious about that painted triangle that I pointed out earlier, the treatment on Main and Weaver. This is that corner I was referring to. It looks like you could have a similar kind of crosswalk treatment like there is on that street with just painted lines. And then that way we could implement this in this proposed road diet just with painted lines.
Yeah, I think what you'd want to do is you'd want to consider what needs to happen at this intersection. And if folks are going to be turning left in their cars onto West Poplar and turning left in their cars onto East Poplar, you'd want to consider where you might be able to make any kind of pedestrian amenity. Of course, a crosswalk, I think, could be considered, but at the same time, you probably wouldn't have enough room for a bike lane, a through lane, a left turn lane, and then a pedestrian refuge island, and then another through lane, and then a bike lane.
Right. If we go to Main and Weaver, it seems like it's the same kind of corner or intersection. I mean, so I'm just wondering why we can't have a similar treatment right here.
But a similar treatment like at Main and Weaver, but instead it would be in the middle.
Maybe it's because we have lights, traffic lights there, and we don't hear.
I think the question that is, to be clear, what would be the exact location of that painted island? Would it be in the middle of the road, or would it be at this location?
Yeah, that's the one I'm referring to right there.
Right here?
Yeah, that's how it is on Main and Weaver Street. And you have a crosswalk crossing that little lane, and then you have another one going to the corner.
Mm-hmm. I just would.
Can we inquire with DOT about that?
Sure. Yeah, I would think that would be the best option is to consider it further. I'm not sure if I can provide a definitive answer.
I didn't think you were.
Okay.
Thanks, though.
Yeah. And one more point I wanted to make is that with the TAB recommendation of a traffic impact analysis, you'll note in the fiscal and staff impact of the agenda abstract that this could be completed. I think the scope of the project would involve collection of traffic data, analysis, recommendations, public outreach, and presentation to the board and advisory boards. And we wanted to just note that there's a staff impact if it were to be done in-house of a very rough estimate would be 200 hours of work. And if that were to be translated to a consultant, if a registered engineer were to be procured for this study, it would translate very roughly into the ballpark of $16,000 to $24,000.
200 hours, that's about a week of your time.
Jackie?
I'd like to suggest that if we do that, that we wait until Shelton Station opens, because that's going to have a great impact on Oak Avenue. I don't think everybody there is going to be walking. And that's a lot of units there and businesses, and I'd hate to see us go through either the staff time or the money for something that 3 years down the line was obsolete.
So you think we should delay action after 3 years?
Well
let's, if I may.
Just saying for just this one thing, we wait to the end, right?
I just was going to suggest we have a couple of Oak Avenue residents who are here. Shall we go ahead and hear from them? And then... All right. So I would like to start by calling up Catherine Devine.
Thanks, sir.
Good evening. Happy camper. I don't have any big gripes about the traffic status quo that we have on Oak Avenue now. Like I said, I'm a happy camper. The proposed one-way designation is not undesirable, nor is it real desirable for me. I could argue, but not forcefully, the matter of orientation. Is north to south better for what reason than south to north, which would suit me better, but again, I'm not going to make a big deal of it. I want to say just one thing, too, the most important thing I want to tell you. I really like the proactive nature of the traffic study and this discussion in stark contrast, pardon me, with the reactive nature of so much recent public discussion. Thanks.
Thanks, Catherine. Jenny McMillan and then Michelle Rose.
Unlike Catherine, I have a lot of complaints about the current traffic situation on Elk Avenue. And I'm a little bit disappointed with this study. It was my understanding 3 years ago when I heard they were hiring consultants. I was under the impression that they were going to do an analysis of a one-way on Oak Avenue, that was what instigated the neighborhood study. And so I would be even more disappointed to see you guys delay action for 3 years until Shelton Station came into being, because I've lived in my house for 20 years, and over the years there's been a steady increase in pressure from the traffic on that street. It is a street that is very heavily used by pedestrians day and night. A lot of people walk their dogs there. It is more than just the residents of the neighborhood that use the street. And as it is, there's no way to get out of the way of cars. There have been several times on my end of Oak Avenue when we have put down the things to measure how fast everyone's going to try and get a speed bump. I live on the north end. And we were never successful because not enough cars were going more than the speed limit. But apart from the people that are just going terrifyingly fast, I think that the people that are going the speed limit are going too fast for the nature of that street, for as narrow as it is and as well trafficked as it is by pedestrians. And I think that one solution that in the reality of that we can't afford a sidewalk, even if everybody agreed that that's what we wanted, that would not cost that much money would be to reduce the speed limit on that street to 15 miles per hour. And I think that you could do a lot with signage and a lot with striping to let the cars that are on the road now know that this is not a regular street. They need to go slower. I think you could put fluorescent speed limit signs. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do that certainly I discussed during the public meeting with some of the people that did this study. And I think it would be good to hear more of those thoughts in that direction. Let me see. I think that's everything I have to say. I just think that it's only going to get worse for us. And right now I'm terrified every time my 10-year-old goes down the street on his bicycle. I want him to get there safely, and I want for you guys to do something soon. And I thank you very much for your time.
Go ahead.
All right.
I was just going to ask what made you think that the, given that I haven't been on the board that long, that the impetus for this traffic study was that to make Oak one way, it would be helpful for me to know a little bit.
Well, I don't know what happened in the town. I know that we've changed traffic personnel since this started. There was supposed to, I think that after the south end, and also I do think that going northbound, as has been suggested, is the right way to go, because I think that eliminates the incentive to cut through the neighborhood. My neighbors on the south side have been much more successful with the town and getting a speed bump. They've been much more vocal. And after they got the speed bump, and I'm sure Michelle can fill in on this, there was some talk about, well, in addition, could we make Oak Avenue one way? And then people said, well, if we're going to do that, we need a study. And there was going to be a neighborhood meeting, but then there were personnel changes, and the study happened, but the meeting didn't. Mm-hmm. And that was my understanding based on nothing other than putting things together.
Yeah, you answered my question. It was, which way would you see the one-way traffic? And you said really going out toward North Greensboro if we're one way.
That's from my end of the street. I don't know what it looks like on the other end. But the people that are going exceedingly fast that scare me are usually going south. And not only do they go south on Oak Avenue, but they go up to Merritt, they take a right, they go to Lindsay, they go down Shelton, and they go through Elm. And by the time they get to Elm, they're going 40 miles an hour. I have my neighbor here that lives on Elm that can attest to that.
Thanks.
Jenny, you mentioned that, sidewalks. Is there an interest in sidewalks? Because I know that that's one of the reasons that, you know, you're walking in the road all the time.
I would dearly love to see sidewalks. I know I have many neighbors that don't agree with me, and I think that there are plenty of places on Oak Avenue where even if everyone agreed they wanted them, that you couldn't put them and leave the street the way it is. Mm-hmm. And it's my understanding that the funding's just not there.
Jenny, and I wish I would have brought this up earlier as more people were commenting, but one other idea that we were considering is up Shelton and then going north on Oak and south on Oak from Shelton. So the idea there being that people are cutting through on Oak both ways. So this would be one way to have it be you can't turn in on Oak. It's a one-way coming out this way, and it's a one-way going out
there. That sounds really confusing to me. I remember you brought that up at the last meeting on March 6th. That sounds strange to me. But I would defer to someone who's an engineer.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Michelle Rivest and then John Alderson.
Thanks. I'm Michelle Rivest, and I live at 100 Oak Avenue up by the Weaver Street south end. That direction always confuses me. So I wanted to just first thank Jeff and the consultants for their time. It was really great, as Catherine said, to have this be a proactive process, an inclusive process, and a very friendly process. Walking the town together was a great opportunity. I just wanted to speak to a couple of the solutions that are proposed, the options, one being the one-way north down Oak Avenue towards Greensboro Street. I would be in favor of that for
reasons we've talked about before. It'll be safer, more walkable, more pleasant, more livable, less speed, much less danger for all of us who live in the streets and in the neighborhood, because as you've heard, it's really for the whole neighborhood in the downtown area, Oak Avenue is. So I'm very much in favor of that. I wanted to contrast that a little bit with the sidewalk proposal, and Randy, you asked about that. You know, we have had a lot of discussions about sidewalks on Oak Avenue, and I think the biggest problem for Oak Avenue in terms of sidewalks is that it is narrow now. You would have to, in terms of right-of-way, go right into the mill houses' front yards, which are maybe only 10 or 12 feet deep anyway, mine being one of those. We have 100-year-old oak trees. Some of those would have to go, and the utilities crisscross the entire street up and down. So it'd be a very expensive redo. So in some ways, I think the best option, if it were affordable and feasible, would be to make Oak Avenue one way and put in a sidewalk so we can accomplish all of those goals. That may be a very far-out, long-term, costly solution, so I really like the thought about let's go for something low-cost in the interim. Let's not wait. This has been an issue for a decade. It's only getting worse. I like Jenny's idea about reducing the speed. We hadn't talked about that before, but speed bumps, we too would advocated for both ends of Oak Avenue to have those. It has helped our end to have it, although I think it also just as a challenge for some young drivers to just see how fast they can still get up to the end of the street. So it hasn't solved the problems by any means. So I think striping is another good alternative just to indicate, yes, there are people, bicyclists, people pushing strollers, walking dogs, et cetera. So I think there are some things we can do that wouldn't be too expensive to add to the safety and walkability of the street. So thank you again for the study and the opportunity.
Michelle, when you said a sidewalk, do you mean that if Oak was one way, having just kind of a striped sidewalk like we had on Shelton?
That would be a good first start. But I don't think you'd have opposition to a sidewalk, a formal sidewalk with a curb, if Oak Avenue were one way and the sidewalk was built into the other, some part of the street.
That's what I meant. So yeah. That it wasn't taking the trees.
Wasn't taking the whole trees and the gardens and so on. So
right.
If there's some way to accomplish that,
right,
that would work.
Thanks, Michelle.
We'd be supportive.
Michelle, I want to ask about the speed bump. Would you show us how far, because my recollection
is
that there, yeah. My recollection is there's only one. Is that
there
right?
There is only one.
Yeah.
That's right. So let's see. I always have a hard time. Where's
Weaver Street? It's north of Evansport,
down here.
All the way at the bottom.
Yeah, so
down
it's
here. That's right. So we're, it's about here.
No,
it's, isn't it south
this
Poplar?
One, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, down in there.
Right. So it's right in here.
So that's
almost,
the only, yeah, that's the only one on the whole stretch.
Right.
Okay.
And it's right on that. Right ahead of the curve, yeah, as you come up to Weaver Street. So it's, yeah, helpful because a blind person actually lives right there. So it's a good location.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything for the northern part, yeah, of the street.
It does cause you to see their sign about the resident being blind.
Not really. Because, you know,
it stops
I think
me.
Well, I think it does for some, but I think a lot of drivers still just have their eye on, you know, they're almost to Weaver Street. So if you're walking or hanging out on that end of the street, it often doesn't slow the traffic down at all, or not much anyway. Not enough so that you feel safe.
All right, John Alderson. Thanks, Michelle.
Bad speed bumps.
So I live with Michelle at the south end of Oak Avenue. And like Catherine initiated, I just want to appreciate and encourage this town to continue to do inclusive and proactive approaches that involve the neighborhood in this process. Really feels like being part of a community, and I thank you for that. Michelle has mentioned some of the things that I was going to say, so I'll just echo those. One is one way north. I think that that's a more effective way to go one way just based on our 25 years there. Randy, I think your idea is interesting, and I like thinking about how do you keep people. Sorry, Sammy. How do you keep people from cutting through one way? But I kind of agree with Jenny that it's confusing, but I think it ought to be explored more in terms of what there is that might be another solution we haven't come up with yet at this point. I think the idea of striping is the most cost-effective And I think it's feasible. I really have a question about this study, about why making Oak Avenue one-way has low feasibility. And maybe you guys can speak to that, or maybe the town can look into that further. The thing I want to say about the speed bump that we got on the south end, it isn't the one we asked for. So it doesn't really slow people down like the one over on, I think there's one on Pine that has more impact for a car going over it at 45 miles an hour. So I think if the town was going to consider putting speed bumps north, the bigger one would have make much more difference in this process. The last thing I want to speak to is the notion about the raised pedestrian island. I think it's a really good idea at Greensboro and Oak Avenue. That's a very dangerous intersection for pedestrians crossing any direction. Mm-hmm. And it's a very dangerous intersection for drivers. Turning right is dangerous. Mm-hmm. Turning left, it's a nightmare. Mm-hmm. Also, entering Oak Avenue from Greensboro is also really dangerous. And we had a really good conversation on the street and that walk with the consultants about something needs to be there that slows this whole process down and makes it safe for pedestrians, bikers, and drivers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. All right. Is there anybody else who came to speak on this who hadn't signed up? Come on up, Jackie.
And Chris.
Chris. And Chris in a minute. And that guy in a minute.
I actually just I have more of a question. I live on Elm Street, and recently when we had all the road construction done, the end of the street was actually closed off, so we sort of got to experience that, practically speaking. And I was wondering if the gas station, if that does end up happening, does the gas station get closed off as well? Because what we saw happening was that people were actually gunning it down Elm Street a lot faster than they do generally, which is fast enough, because they knew that there was nobody going to be coming the other way, and then just using the gas station as an entry into that intersection. So I just wanted to make that point. And that's really it. As a resident now, I've been there for 11 years, have no problem having it be cut off at the end, or one way, or whatever it needs to be. But that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jackie. Chris? I didn't realize you were interested in this, Chris.
I didn't get time to sign up. My name's Chris Frank, and I live on Evans Court and the corner of Oak Avenue and Evans Court. And I just want to speak to the idea of waiting several years to do this study. And I think that, as you know, there's so many large projects that haven't happened or are in process, and now we have the East Main project now starting up and the Shelton Station. So there's a lot of development that's going to be going on. We could say that again in 3 years. We need to wait until another development happens before we do this study, before we take any action.
Y'all have convinced me. It's okay. I was just thinking, man, we're going to open this big thing there. So I hope that even if we don't wait, that we at least factor that in a real way.
You folks, are the only people that can really take the long-term look at how it affects the neighborhood and do something now that has real long-term ramifications. The other thing I'd like to say is that, when we were here before trying to get a traffic bump there, and it was recognized by everyone that was an issue that needed to be addressed, and we got a speed table, which is designed for to reduce traffic to 25 miles an hour, if you look at the design of that table, that speed table, and that's what it's designed to do. Well, this is a street that's a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, so it's no wonder that it doesn't really slow traffic down appreciably. So I think we've already established that there's a need to address the traffic issue. And I'll just say one more thing, and that is that if a street was built today in Carrboro, to have that amount of traffic, it would have to have sidewalks on both sides and be several feet wider. So, that would be, if you built a street like that now, it would be designated as an alley, and would not be something that was designed to carry as much traffic as it does. So,
okay.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I was just going to reiterate the point on time, but it sounds like we're all
okay. Yeah, you already convinced Jackie. All right. very good. All right. Board members?
I have a basic question.
All right.
Could somebody, and I'm not saying that I disagree with it, I would just like to understand why the study of one way on that street would take either 200 hours or $24,000. Like, what's the scope of work there? It's not that I don't trust you. It's just I don't get it.
Help us understand what you'll be looking
at. Uh-huh.
I think what you'd want to take a look at is the different phases of the study. You need to collect comprehensive data to do it. You would probably want to collect segment counts on various segments along Oak Avenue. So you would need to have staff put out and take up traffic counters. You'd probably need some human counters at this is just off the top of my head, just so you know, at each end and maybe in the middle, so you could get an idea of what traffic volumes are on each segment to help you know how many cars are actually going through and how many cars are driving on Oak to access homes. And then you would, I think, want to maybe collect some data on nearby streets, too, to know what the traffic impact might be on nearby streets of making it one way. Perhaps it could be done for less than 200 hours, a very rough estimate.
I'm not saying that you're wrong. I just want to understand what goes into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the key issues in the one-way, northbound one-way proposal for Oak Avenue is, I don't really have a sense of how much of this school traffic coming in the morning to elementary school to the elementary school comes down Oak Avenue to get there. And well, I've got a good feeling about how much of that traffic comes down Ash Street. I know that, and there's a lot. And I guess the point being that you know, if you make Oak Avenue one way northbound, then any school traffic that's currently coming in on Oak Avenue heading toward Carver Elementary is going to be shifted around to have to come in on Shelton Street. And that's not necessarily, that doesn't, I mean, maybe that works fine, and maybe that's, like, I think most of the school buses come in on Shelton Street already because they can't make that turn at Oak and Shelton. But they do make that turn. Well, anyway, but the point being that it's both the school buses and the sort of moms and dads dropping off that we need to consider that about. Okay. Yes.
And I don't know if this is for Jeff, but so I heard four recommendations coming from speakers, and I just kind of want to make sure I haven't left anything else. One is reducing speed. The second is striping. Third, it seems fairly consistent. Folks really like the idea of the one-way northbound. And fourth is the, raised pedestrian island at Oak and Greensboro. And then, and I guess this is dependent upon the other factors, would be a considerable speed bump or table, because some tables are actually pretty formidable. Is there any other?
Yeah, that's people? Right.
Okay. So
was that a motion to add those items to?
And unless I left, you're right.
It would be I think the combination one way and sidewalk.
Right. That's what you meant.
Right. Marked pedestrian.
Right. But the combo of those two. Not either or, but a both.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So if there's nothing else that needs to be added to that list,
is the combo on the list? Not to be dense. I just want to.
Yeah.
Did you get that, Jeff?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll second. Okay.
Special combo.
So does that leave like the Elm, the question of the Elm
with
Street
the friendly
intersection?
Amendment that on the resolution where it talks about the road diet, that we include exploration of Sammy's idea of adding the painted refuge by East Poplar.
Would I need to add in the request to look into the bike box, or is that something?
Well, I wasn't entirely persuaded about it,
okay.
but I'm not opposed to it exactly, but just we'd need more information.
I'd like to see it somewhere,
I think.
Could I add, just to make sure, not just I was hoping we could also refer to DOT when they come to us with a road diet plan, not just the painted island, but the possibility of a crosswalk there, perhaps kind of like Weaver Street and Main treatment is.
So I think that's intended as a friendly amendment. Mm-hmm. Who moved it again? Randy?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, and you all accept that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to make sure, along with the combo, that whatever study is done factors in the best estimate possible of the impact of Shelton Station on the neighborhood, because that's going to change the traffic count. So we know how many units are going in there. We don't believe that there'll be one car each. So let's factor that in as much as we can.
And are we considering the issue of that one solid line where the drop-off is for kids? Did we already speak to that?
You're talking about that we talked about that a little bit at Shelton and Ash. I'm not sure what conclusion we drew, but
there was a recommendation, right?
Did you all recommend a solution to that problem, or I think it's just kind of
about it's almost the last meeting of just sort of marking it that one side is just for drop off only,
right?
And not a travel lane.
Yeah, the street through should be a kind of jog left. Mm-hmm. We just need some pavement marking out there.
Just signage.
Okay.
This resolution does not include a roundabout out here.
No.
Okay. As if it did, I couldn't vote for it.
Randy, are you keeping track of all those additions to your resolution?
I've got six.
For study.
As long as Kathy's got
someone, Jeff's writing away.
Kathy and Jeff. That's good.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. All right. That brings us to a public hearing on a concept for safety improvements in the Jones Ferry Road corridor.
Which would be Jeff.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
So this regards a public hearing on a concept plan that has been worked on through collaboration with NCDOT division staff and town staff. But before we get into the details of the concept plan, I wanted to show some photos of the existing conditions on this section of Jones Ferry Road that is being considered tonight. This right here is looking eastbound from NC 54 bypass. You can see here that at this point, Jones Ferry Road is a six-lane section. It's a five to six-lane section between the 54 bypass off-ramp and Davie Road. You can see it's very wide and includes left turn, center left turn lane slash kind of a left turn bay. Additional right turn lane for the on-ramp onto 54 bypass. And this is looking westbound from the bypass, also a six-lane section with turning lanes and significant volume of cars turning left and right onto eastbound 54 bypass. If you look underneath, you can see that it's a pretty wide stretch here and looking this way. So, and I can go back to those photos if we need to refer to them. But the basic background on Jones Ferry Road is that there are some current conditions slash issues that have prompted concern from residents in the area and concern from Board of Aldermen members over the safety of this corridor. Traffic speeds from a 2005 estimate, 85th percentile speed, in other words, the speed at which 85% of cars go at or lower, is 40 miles an hour. Posted speed limit is 35 miles an hour. There's about 9,000 cars a day on the road. The right-of-way width is generally 60 to 80 feet, and the pavement width is around Davie Road is about 60 feet. There's about 5 to 6 lanes along this corridor that we're talking about, which is between Willow Creek Shopping Center slash Ashbrook Apartments driveway and a little bit east of Davie Road. There's limited westbound sight distance at Davie Road intersection because of the infamous crest of the hill. Crossing distance for pedestrians is an issue, crossing those 6 lanes, and also the lateral crossing location of pedestrians. In other words, pedestrians don't always cross at the intersections, which is, of course, less predictable for drivers, especially new drivers. There are pedestrian warning beacons east on Jones Ferry Road, which I think help, but you know, I think that there's still an issue there. There is a potential bus stop conflict points and pretty heavy pedestrian volumes, as we all know. Our mobility report card took a look at those, and we see within a 12-hour period between about 800 and 1,000 pedestrians on a daily basis. There's the bus stop at Abbey Court. This is the highest ridership bus stop in the in Carrboro. It has a combined boarding and alighting of 660, and there's obviously pedestrians crossing the street to get to the bus, to and from the stop. This is also a school bus stop as well. There are 20 reported crashes over a 5-year period from November 2006 to October 2011, just at or near the Davy Jones Ferry intersection alone, and these are just reported crashes. This is according to an NCDOT crash report. And here is an image of the intersection taken from the Abbey Court side. You see Ridgewood Apartments here. This was taken earlier today. And Davy Road on your left.
Did you Photoshop that without cars? How did you do that?
Yeah, there were. I took a few others with a lot of cars.
That's the thing is there's a car coming right now. Yeah. That's what's tricky about this intersection. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't see it
right there. So the town staff and NCDOT have. Work together on a concept plan for improvements in this section, and NCDOT presented the plan to staff in January. In general, the plan involves a road diet, reducing the number of vehicle lanes. It adds new bike lanes where there aren't any. It adds new marked crosswalks, and there's also a potential for filling in sidewalk segments where they don't exist right now. The plan also includes raised medians along the Abbey Court and Ridgewood Apartments frontage. So the raised median would extend from Davy Road intersection to this driveway right here. Well, this would cause one of the two access changes for cars. It would make this driveway of Ridgewood Apartments a right-in, right-out. So you would not be able to take a left turn out of here. This driveway into Ridgewood Apartments would stay as a full movement access. So you could take a left in and left out from there. And the concept plan includes retaining the painted median to the east of here.
Does Ridgewood Apartments, and I don't remember, have a driveway onto Davie?
They don't, no. This driveway does loop around the building.
Yeah.
So if you're right here and you wanted to turn left, you'd probably go right and take a U-turn, or you could drive around and take a left out there.
No, that would be like Smith Level Roads.
So the other access limitation, there would be a raised median along the Abbey Court frontage right here, which would not allow lefts out of this gas station. Those left turns are extremely close to the Davie Road intersection and right where pedestrians tend to cross, and right near the crest of the hill. So a raised median would be placed here. The Alabama Avenue access would stay as it is, so it would be full movement. The median would just extend right here. So in order to get into the gas station, you'd have to turn left onto Davie and then left right here into the gas station.
Jeff, tangential question. What's the status of the Family Dollar application?
I would defer that to Trish.
Okay. You can answer that when you're done.
Okay. The concept plan also includes painted medians within the remaining segments. So those two segments that I mentioned are the only two raised medians shown in the concept plan. It includes left turn bays to replace the center turn lane between Davie Road and the NC-54 bypass. All left turn movements would be retained except for that one into the gas station and into the western driveway of Ridgewood Apartments. And then it proposes new bike lane segments. There are currently no bike lanes west of Davie Road. Because you're taking existing vehicle lanes to add the bike lanes, I believe preliminarily that there'd be enough room to go beyond the standard 5 to 6 foot bike lane and take a look at buffered or protected bike lanes in this segment. An example is on the right.
Is that what's illustrating that?
That'd be great.
This image illustrates what it might look like. You can buffer it either with a raised curb or with paint and bollards like this. Mm-hmm. The concept plan proposes new bike lanes, and there's still some room to finalize what the design would be.
Jeff, this, you know, we talked about having the sidewalk on Oak. This could be a treatment. I know one of the issues was the fire truck not being able to go through, but you know, a fire truck could probably run over those things pretty easily without. Are these the kind of like pop
yes,
back?
They are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we could have that kind of thing, mm-hmm. or just like little transportation advisory board talked about little mounds too. But that agenda item is passed. Something to consider.
All right. Yep.
The concept plan would also potentially allow for a sidewalk on the north side of the road, west of Davie, along the gas station frontage. And going west from there. West of Alabama Avenue, there is a sidewalk, and there's sidewalks on the south side of the road there, too. Adding a sidewalk would not necessarily be a necessary condition of the plan. The plan, most of the other elements of the plan could still go ahead, even if the sidewalk were not implemented concurrently with the rest of the elements of it. It would also allow for high visibility crosswalk markings to be added, especially at the Davie Road intersection. It proposes a painted bus pull-off at the Abbey Court bus stop. And if I could go back to the photo of the bus stop, it would just be basically kind of like a painted bulb out kind of right here that would... that would not change much except for it would eliminate what's a very awkward condition, which is this deceleration lane kind of transitions into a bike lane right here as you go east. So that would essentially visually, with pavement markings, eliminate that as a kind of a lane slash bike lane.
But does that mean that the bus would have space to pull in? Yeah.
Yes.
You can see in that picture where folks are standing and how close to the road, you know, they have to...
But the thing is that
I'm sorry.
That right-hand lane ends right after that. I mean, just beyond the crest of that hill.
Yeah, it turns.
So that's really
turns
part of the problem is that some people come down that right-hand lane and like, you know, they think they're driving on a four-lane road and just heading in into town at 45 miles an hour or whatever, and it's all about to come to an end.
Right, it narrows.
Sorry, Jackie.
It looks to me that a fair number of trees would have to come down. Is that true? Like when I was looking at the map, it looked like a lot of trees would have to come down. And this is kind of one of the entrances to the town, and it would look really different without those trees.
This is mainly a plan for within the face of curb of the road, but I think the question where that would come in would be the sidewalk, potential sidewalk.
Could you go back to the drawings? Nope. There was one that the lines went through.
Keep going back.
Trees. No. Like there.
Yeah, it's actually catching the shadow of the crowns of a lot of those trees.
Right, but there was another
picture similar to that.
That it wasn't a photograph, it was a map.
Oh.
Okay, there it looks like, is the yellow line where it would go? That's not the shadow.
Right away. On the south side there, it's showing you where the edge of the legal right-of-way is, not necessarily where any improvements would go.
So we're not looking at a lot of tree loss?
Well, it just means we own those trees, or
right.
DOT does.
Well, then let's cut them down.
Yeah, more.
we own them.
I don't think there's any anything in the concept plan that changes this sidewalk stretch.
Okay, how about on the other side? For the whole concept plan, will we be losing many trees?
I'm not sure if we can answer that at this point. If a sidewalk is placed here, you may have to look at what the tree impact would be, for sure.
Okay.
The land drops away on the north side of there, doesn't it, quite a bit?
Yeah, it's downhill going this way, going
so
westbound.
So it's not just a question of where 5 or 6 feet is from the edge of the existing curb or right-of-way, but also the kind of slope and fill beyond that that you end up having to do. That's
you're going north of that.
Yeah, I'm saying that sidewalk on that side through that stretch is part of the issue. Similar to on Smith Level Road, it's not just the sidewalk, it's the
right, the
grading to support the sidewalk right. That really starts to invade far from the street. But anyway.
Jeff, is that median that's shown there, how wide is that median?
Which median?
That one right there.
Right there?
That cross, yeah.
This left turn lane?
Yeah, I mean, where it says Jones Ferry, isn't that what would be like a small median?
Yeah.
In the plan?
That median, I'm not sure the exact width of it, but I do have an image of the concept plan itself that I could pull mm-hmm. up if that would help.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Yeah.
Let me zoom in here. If you can see, I know it's a little bit difficult to see. This plan literally is a concept plan, so it's done in pencil. But you have this right here is the median. So if you kind of look at it superimposed on a lane, you look at it's maybe a little half or a little bit wider than the lane width, so mm-hmm. I would estimate somewhere around 5 to 7 feet.
I'm just wondering, and I'm just thinking out loud, because the one thing that when you come off 54 and you're headed north, east, is it I don't know.
East.
Towards Bim Street, let's say.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we have a crosswalk there, is there any way that median, would it be even all the way along the edge, or does it taper?
This median,
it looks like it's balanced all the way through rather than tapering from narrow to, you know, tapering to wider.
It tapers to wider back here after you, or before you get to the left turn bay.
Because one of the things that I think would really help bring a sense of warmth to that area was if we were to have within the median some plantings or planters, because the one thing that happens on that road is it feels cavernous. I mean, it just has a very very cold feel to it. And Jackie's absolutely right. It's the entranceway into our downtown and our farmers market and town hall and downtown whatever. But you know where I'm going with this. So it that would maybe warm it up, because it really it does not feel as well tended and cared for and community like as the rest of town.
Yeah.
Many years ago, when I was a young Alder girl, and they were beginning the improvements going up Jones Ferry, like near where Willow Creek is, and they built that pedestrian median there. It was planted, and the plants did not survive because of, I think they may have gotten flooded out, or they just died from the cars or something. But that there in the middle, that median had been planted. Remember that, Mike?
No.
Well, that doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Assuredly so.
That's right.
Okay.
That's
more than
10 minutes ago.
Remember, agenda item 1. All right. Okay. Oh, you're still going. Go ahead.
The final feature.
Yeah.
Final
no, I think we should do it. It was originally planned.
You're trying to lecture me? These two. Go ahead.
Final few slides here. The idea of adding bike lanes is included in the Carborough Bike Plan, which recommends Jones Ferry Road as an important corridor with high priority among participants. And it recommends bike lanes on Jones Ferry from Davy Road west to Old Fayetteville, including consideration of colored bike lanes, which we saw in that previous image. And then, of course, the town has a bond project to build a sidewalk on Davy Road as well. So the next steps, NCDOT has indicated that this project may be eligible for spot safety funding, which is a particular pot of state funds used for safety improvements. Mm-hmm. And there are several review criteria for spot safety applications. The regional traffic safety engineer at NCDOT would submit the application, and then it would be evaluated according to these criteria: frequency of crashes, severity of crashes, delay, and so forth. There's a maximum allocation for these awards of $250,000.
Is there no local match on this?
There's, as I understand it, there is no required local match. This would be a state-funded project. But the caveat that they have indicated to us is that because of the high crash history and the severity of crashes in this corridor, this project may very well be eligible for the spot safety funding. But that eligibility might be limited to certain time, and preliminarily they have said that in order to maintain that eligibility, they would like to submit an application by June of this year. That's a preliminary date, but that's the reason for wanting to get input sooner rather than later on whether to go forward with this application or not. So that's the process from here.
Okay.
Sounds like a good idea.
And speaking of which, I would like to call on Anissa McClendon to address the board. I see a couple other people from the neighborhood who are here. Anissa's the only one who signed up right now. Is there anybody else who was hoping to speak? Okay.
I just got a couple of things I would like to say. In question to your entrance of the proposed Family Dollar, it will be off of my road, Alabama Avenue. In reference to this diet plan, when I think of Jones Ferry, my little road, Alabama Avenue, gets forgotten in that stretch. There have been 20 accidents in 4 or 5 years, but that's not the whole accidents of Jones Ferry. There have been 82 car accidents just on Jones Ferry in 4 years. 4 years, 20 there at that intersection of Davie, and then 12 right in front of Alabama and Jones Ferry. That area has about 40 to 46% of the accidents there. I think if we go to this diet plan, it's going to hinder our usage of our street, even trying to go to the left turn to go back up Jones Ferry. Just hearing about what Jeff said about people coming out of the pantry taking that right turn, what they're going to do is they're going to take that right turn, they're going to go into my cul-de-sac, turn around, and go back up into mm-hmm. Carborough. That's what's going to happen. We already have traffic now that comes up Alabama, go through Navy, Neville Drive to go up Davie to cut through the mist. A lot of that congestion there at Jones Ferry and Davie. One of my suggestions would be, I know the town doesn't want to take that hill out because of the pipes and the cables, and it would take millions of dollars to do that. One major thing could be just putting the traffic light there, adding that crossing walk from Abbey Court over to the pantry or Ridgewood over to the pantry. I think reducing the speed limit from that 35, which most people do go 40, 45, over that hill from into Carborough back to 54, reducing it to 30, reducing it to 25. You're coming into the town, just reduce it. One of the major things is that bus stop sitting on that hill. Suggest moving that up near the tennis courts, even the school buses, because in the morning, 7:30, 7:45, it is, you've got the transit bus sitting there, and then you've got the school bus stopping to pick up kids, and kids are just running, you know, everywhere trying to make it. Another suggestion would be to, there's a little service road behind Abbey Court, and it would be have to, you know, Abbey Court people would have to say yes, they want to do it. But there's a service road right by the tennis courts, which nobody plays tennis there. I think we could use that service road to go out to Jones Ferry. Then they could take a right turn, a left turn on that. I think that's pretty much it. Okay?
Thanks.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Tamara, and I'm at the corner of Neville Drive, a little gravel drive, and Davie. And Jeff, one question I have for you is that it sounded like there was an alternate idea for the Ridgecrest entrance. I kind of got an idea from Minnesota, actually, that there was looking at, like, putting the that exit from Ridgecrest right across from Neville, which right now, like, you know, as a neighborhood, we're considering, like, you know, looking into the whole ideas of making that a play street so it's not a through street. And I think that now, like, right now people do come up Davie and cut down Neville and then down Alabama and out. I mean, it's a gravel drive. Like, it's teeny. I don't think it can handle much at all. So I think, and then on top of that, adding the Family Dollar stuff kind of really, you know, just all that much more traffic with cut through on both ends really worries me. I'm thinking back of, like, when I broke my leg and I was on crutches, and I crutched down Davie and across Jones Ferry, and, like, thinking back to that, and, like, we have all sorts of, like, you know, kids and people on bikes and stuff, like, trying to still get across that, even if it has been road die, if it's not significantly, you know, speeds of traffic reduced, like, I'm not sure I can get across real fast on some crutches again. I think Anissa had some good ideas in there. I'm excited about the road diet. And then I heard at one point maybe even ideas of potential roundabout there, too, to slow things down. I don't know what roundabouts do for pedestrians, but are you thinking?
There's debate about that.
Okay.
As a pedestrian, I don't like them, but some people believe that they're good. But I walk everywhere.
Yeah, and I bike everywhere, and like I'm not. Anything to slow it down. And I do agree. Like it's. I mean, even if it's still at 35 miles per hour, like that. Just the grade of the hill. I mean, it sounds like you'll talk about that a lot. But.
All right. Thanks, Tamara.
Thanks.
Was there anybody else? Okay. Board members. Or did you want to hear Trish's response
yeah.
on
yeah.
Trish, could you give us an update on the Family Dollar?
Sure. We have a special use permit application in and a variance application because we've determined that there is a need to for the project to get a variance for a part of the stream buffer on the property. And those applications are under review right now, so they've resubmitted their plans essentially, and we have not yet scheduled a public hearing for the project.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there other questions or suggestions about the plan?
I was just curious to know whether some of the points made by Anise. I understand there's a timeline here. Is there going to be an opportunity afterwards to perhaps consider those, or are you going to be making this application with a preliminary plan that may preclude some ideas?
In terms of the traffic signal, at idea at the intersection. That's been studied in the past, as I understand it, for warrants and not met the warrants. I think potentially could be studied in the future for warrants, but I think at this time the warrants are not met. There's not enough traffic on Davie to meet the warrants.
How many accidents do they need?
I think that... I mean, it's something that I can't answer in full right now, but
they look at the type of accident and whether a traffic light would be likely to prevent or reduce the chance of that kind of accident and the amount of property damage, and they have a whole huge set of criteria.
And I think if the road diet were implemented, road diets in general tend to reduce speeds. If you reduce the posted speed limit, but you do not change the cross-section at all, you don't necessarily get lower speeds because the design speed dictates generally how cars travel. So not to pick on Chapel Hill, but on MLK Boulevard, you have a design speed that encourages high speeds, but you have a posted speed limit of 35. The 85th percentile speed is much higher than 35. So I think the first thing that needs to happen to reduce speeds is a change in the cross-section, which is proposed by the concept plan, and then I think that is a more significant factor in reducing speeds than simply reducing the posted speed limit.
Mm-hmm. Dan, and then Lydia.
Jeff, is time of the essence in terms of applying for this funding, or what is the time frame?
We've been told that the time frame is they would like to apply by June.
Okay, so. Would you have time to reflect on some of the neighbor comments we heard this evening and report back to us, you know, sometime in the next few weeks, say, before we actually adopt the resolution and move forward, if that was what the board wanted?
It would be fine with me.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a good suggestion. Lydia?
Yeah, and I guess in particular I was interested in the concern about the right-hand turns creating possibly some more traffic on Alabama, that folks might go in there and just to turn around and come back out, or that they would be going up there to do the U-turn kind of right in front of that entrance.
Jackie?
I thought the idea of moving the bus stop was a really good idea.
Interesting idea.
It probably wouldn't be that big of a deal, but it would make a a huge difference when you're coming up the crest.
And then the other thing that I'm concerned about is, I think, what's the name of the little gravel road?
Neville.
Yeah, just the, if you're going to make a center median on Jones Ferry Road, it does seem like you're inviting more people to find out about Neville Road. So, I just would question whether that road should really be open to traffic in the way that it currently, that Neville should be open to traffic. If you're going to put a center median in, it just seems like you then, you have to do something about that problem. Particularly if this Family Dollar application is really going to move forward, but even regardless, really. But anyway. All right, so, Dan, was that a motion you made? All right, is there a second?
I have a question.
Yes.
Would we add the recommendation to look at planters or median, or would that come later?
Yeah, you might as well throw it in there. Sure. I mean, I don't.
That's a friendly amendment.
They're probably not going to let you spend safety money on that. But.
Okay. And I'd like to make a friendly amendment that Tab look at this too.
Do we? When do they meet next? In
April 5th.
April 5th. Okay. Is that all right? Is that friendly to the mover and seconder? All that. Okay. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. All right.
Thanks, Jeff.
Good night, Jeff.
Good work.
Yeah. Oh, one last
one
thing.
One-man show.
Related to this,
yes.
I was, one of the things brought up when we looked at Oak was the speed bumps and how they're not really serving their purpose, intended purpose. So I'd be curious to have staff look at how to maybe consider speed bumps that are not so forgiving to cars, or at least make sure that when we do implement speed bumps, they at least match the intended speed of the road.
All right.
Good idea. Was that a motion?
That's a motion.
Second. Okay.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Mr. Manager, did you want to comment on that at all?
No.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion, signify
aye.
By saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. Okay. Is there anything else from the staff?
Just a couple of quick items. Just wanted to remind you that tomorrow at 11 is the groundbreaking for the Hampton Inn and Suites, and Annette has decorated your shovels, so they're ready for you.
Okay.
And
that's tomorrow at 11.
Tomorrow at 11. At the 370 East Main. Also, I have before you the comments at Randy's request from the Planning Board for their March 15th meeting for the 201 North Greensboro Street project as an informational item. And also, Mr. Chris Bostick is here from CVS to answer any questions if needed, Mr. Mayor.
Are they requesting that we reschedule the public hearing at this time, or are they not?
I don't believe formally. I think it was an informational item for you, just to let you know that it's coming.
Let's see. Sure.
I'm sorry to let us know that what's coming when.
But they may be asking us, or will be asking us.
No, we did receive today a written request, and we provided it at your places from, and it was emailed as well earlier today, just late this afternoon, with a request regarding postponement of the hearing. And Chris Bostick is here to answer questions or provide comments on that if you'd like to hear from him.
Why are they making a request?
Would it be okay if Chris, it's because they've made some revisions to their plans.
All right, hold on one second. So, Dan, you had another question for Trish?
Yeah.
Sure.
What would the implications be of rescheduling the CUP hearing but not the rezoning hearing? Are those separable in this kind of situation or not?
They're not. This is a conditional use rezoning, and the type of, so long as it is a rezoning, a conditional use rezoning, which is what is our current application and what's been reviewed to date and anticipated as the likely is likely going forward, they have to occur concurrently. The review of both, the hearings on both, both the conditional use permit and the rezoning have to take place simultaneously together. I mean, essentially, concurrently, is the description of the ordinance.
And you've had a chance to look at the new concept plans that haven't been, the application hasn't been modified, but you've seen the potential changes that might be made?
Yes, we, they were, I mean, they, the applicant had on the agenda for the planning board on their March 15th meeting a discussion of their project and update of response to planning board comments that had been received at the joint review meeting. And they provided these options as part of their response to the planning board's comments. And so we've looked at them very briefly. They're not detailed. It's not a revised set of plans that have been are ready to be distributed for review or anything. They're just optional treatments of portions of the site. And some additional information was provided to the planning board about building elevations and treatment of the building as well.
My question about that was around, since you've seen at least the concept plan, I know it's not the full detailed plan, and potential review would need to happen of this, how long would that, I know you can't commit to a time frame, but because you're an expert in this, I'm wondering how long it might take, just a guess.
Well,
to see the plans and get feedback, how long are we looking at?
You know, I mean, I think our hope would be that it could occur in one round of review, which would be a month and a half kind of time frame. But I'm not as familiar with all of the details of the site in terms of stormwater, for example, as others. And so it might require changes to those things. And it might mean it would take more than one round of review, which would just be, twice that long. So it could be several months. I mean, it could be a couple of months before the plans were at the point where they had been found to be in compliance with the land use ordinance or ready to go forward to a public hearing.
Is that one round of staff review or one round of review with our advisory boards?
That's a review by the staff and agencies involved in the review of the project.
But not a re-review by our advisory boards?
No, but prior to it coming to public hearing, it would go back to the advisory boards for them to make recommendations again, so as was done before.
Okay, Lydia, and then Mr. Bostic, if you want to.
Yeah, when this request was made, it prompted me to kind of look at our land use ordinance and try to figure out, what was happening with this kind of, decision by the applicant to look at comments from the boards, from the advisory boards, and then to make those comments, incorporate them into a new plan or a modified plan or whatever it turns out to be. And I guess my question is, and I was trying to think in my time on the board, is this unusual for, a project to come forward and then it kind of goes through the advisory boards before it even comes to us? There's such a revision of sorts that then it kind of makes its way back through the advisory boards before it even comes to us. I mean, I know this is a really well-publicized one, and we all know about it, and in fact, they've come to see us a time or two already to kind of preliminarily talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But is this inordinately unusual, the time that it's taking to go back around again? Or
yes.
I would have to say that, I can't answer that question without going back and checking, to be perfectly honest, because there have been many projects over the years that we've reviewed. It isn't uncommon for there to be, comments to such a degree that they get incorporated into a project as either a condition or as an alternative. And for example, with the Winmore development,
mm-hmm.
there were changes that were made to the amount of open space that was going to be dedicated as part of the project, for example,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. So it isn't completely uncommon. It never happens.
Could I just comment on that? I think more my usual experience, what is uncommon is for, or less common is for a development to get to the point where it is already scheduled for a public hearing. Usually it doesn't get scheduled for a public hearing. Usually the developer is pushing to get it scheduled, but doesn't get scheduled until it's ready for you to act upon it. The kinds of changes that we see in this context, I've seen happen a lot but usually at a more preliminary stage. And we'll have three or four meetings with a development review or staff meetings where we look at things and we comment on it. Maybe they go to the concept review plan and they a lot of changes are made, but they don't take one plan all the way to the public hearing and then go back and change it. Those kinds of changes and revisions are often occur, but usually at an earlier stage. So I think it's just the scheduling that was the only thing that surprised me about this was that they were apparently ready to get to the public hearing, or it wouldn't have been scheduled.
Wait, hold on. Sammy?
I just wanted, it seems like this is partly triggered by the protest petition, and so maybe that would be a question: to what degree has it come to a big question, perhaps by the developers, of it being a plan that may not go through, given the added challenge for them to, have more board members supporting it, and then, just kind of trying to fix that as best they can to have a better chance.
Go ahead.
I wanted to ask about when the changes are so vast that it requires a new application versus just a modification of an application. Because these seem like big changes from what I've seen. Do you know that? I don't know. I guess it's for Mike or for you, the question, or both of you, but.
Well, I mean, it's a matter of, to some degree, it's not a hard and fast determination. It's an assessment of the project. And we would look at, where are the points of access? What is the size of the building? How much parking is required? What are the proposed uses? And sort of the program for the site and evaluate those things in the options from the current application to a changed one and make a determination as to how much of a change there would be from one to the other. And so what we've seen so far, it still has the same points of access. There is a reduction in parking in the examples that are shown. And all of the details aren't provided in this concept, so we haven't been able to fully assess that. But there are, the building is still a two-story building. The building looks very much like the elevations that have been shown so far. And the uses are still the same. So anyway, okay. So we haven't seen, so anyway, it's a matter of degrees looking at the details.
Sorry. So, Trish, am I correct in my understanding that the advisory board comments that perhaps these new proposals are responding to have been fairly consistent going back into 2011 and perhaps as far back as last spring? When this first came before the advisory boards. Is that right?
The planning board's comments have been fairly consistent.
And quite a ways back. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they're requesting not to go forward with the public hearing on April 17th.
That's
correct.
And
there's no specific suggestion about when that public hearing would happen.
Not at the present time.
Okay. So could we... one possible motion here would be to delay this item from the April 17th public hearing until a later date.
Well, we can't make somebody do a public hearing.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, of course we can.
What do you mean?
No, of course we can't. You can't make somebody.
It's scheduled. They request a public hearing. It's scheduled.
Right. But if there's.
No, we've got.
I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but we can't say, I guess we could, but...
I'm not saying we should. I'm just saying we could.
Well,
Mark, I'll make a motion to delay the public hearing, postpone the public hearing until some later date when it's rescheduled.
Okay. Is there a second for that motion?
I'll second it.
Okay. Thank you. So it's been moved and seconded that we postpone from April 17th, 2012, for the public hearing on the date later to be determined for a public hearing on the Redlands, Inc. Application at 201 North Greensboro Street. Is there any further discussion on that? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Matter passes 6-1. All right.
Are we done with that? Because I was just going to.
Oh, we're done.
And I was just going to say, I don't know, Trish, if it was possible at all to, maybe not, you know, your schedule better, whether Claremont could be moved up to that time frame because of our concern about the videotaping and audio taping, but it may not be within our time frame. So.
We have not asked them if they would, if that, what, you know, the applicants, they are working to get materials back to us to. For the agenda packets for the advisory board meeting, the joint review meeting, at the beginning of the month. So,
Are people open to that? We could pass a motion authorizing that if the staff's prepared and the applicant wants to do it that night.
What's the question?
Having Claremont come back on April 17th, I guess.
If they're open for it, I'll make that motion. If it's
as long as Omar's not going to be in Orlando.
Staff,
it's
okay. And I don't know scheduling staff.
Right. If staff and applicant can do it.
So we authorize it if it works.
Okay.
All right.
Is that sufficient to set the hearing, Mike? Just want to know. Or would that we do that next week? We could bring it back to you and find out the details.
If the board authorizes it subject to the...
Okay.
Staff.
Just want to be clear.
Approval. I mean, then they've authorized.
That's fine.
Said it. It's just a matter of advertising.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So
that
was moved by whom?
Me.
Jackie.
No, seconded by Dan. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Yes. So moved.
Moved and seconded. All over the place.